There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome to Your Booked. I'm your book inspector, Daisy Buchanan.
Our guest this week is Lucy Vine, the journalist and the author of the romantic comedies What Fresh Hell and Hot Mess. We went to Cambridge to record with Lucy in her lovely place in the country with her dog, Ivy, and her mum's dogs were joining in as well. It was a fabulously canine episode. Lucy is someone that I got to know through journalism. We both sat next to each other for a bit doing various holiday covers at Grazia. She's one of the funniest people I know and has a real ear and eye for comedy. She's a big reader and, like me, she's always looking for things that make her laugh. I've known her for a few years and I really love spending time with her. And it's a joy to talk to my friend about books. And she's got a really interesting selection. And there were a few surprises and things that I wasn't expecting to see. So hopefully you'll enjoy it as much as I did. I'm here with my good friend, the esteemed author, Lucy Vine, the writer of Hot Mess and What Fresh Hell. Have you ever taken any books and returned them to their owners in a dodgy state, like covered in sun cream or dropped into the pool?
Oh my god.
You ever borrowed a book and dropped it in the bath?
Daisy, I'm not a monster, so no, obviously not.
I don't believe you.
Well, I was brought up, my dad loves writing and he's always had this obsessive thing about keeping books pristine. And I don't sort of entirely agree with him, but as a child it was so drilled into me not to bend corners over and to make sure that you didn't pull the spine back too far or anything like that. So I think, especially if I was borrowing somebody's book, I would be so careful with it.
I'm imagining him sort of in another room with you at home. I don't hear bookmarks being used.
Yeah, handing out bookmarks every evening as much as possible. Yeah, no, but I know, because I feel such an emotional attachment to books, I know that if somebody lent me their book, they might have that feeling, even if it's something seemingly trivial. So I just would be very careful. So I don't think I've had any absolute mishaps, but I think I would secretly buy a copy of that book and replace it if I did do that.
Oh, well, I will be glad to lend you anything you like.
Thank
after
God.
That. So when you were a child, what are the first things you remember reading when you knew you probably shouldn't be reading them or you might get into trouble if you got caught?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. Because my dad was so obsessed with books, and my mum as well, she was an English teacher, they're both very book people. There wasn't hugely things off limit. I was certainly an obsessive reader and there was definitely a lot of things like the Roald Dahl and everything, which I'm still will reread obsessively. In fact, my dad met Roald Dahl. He interviewed him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm so obsessed with that story. Yeah, so my dad briefly in the 80s had this literary magazine that he launched, which was all about books.
What was it called?
It was called Words. highly original. And I mean, it didn't last very long because he had no money and it was basically just him writing everything and editing everything. Yeah, so he actually kind of got to interview some amazing people and do some really cool things. But the Roald Dahl thing was my favourite because he so rarely gave interviews. And my dad, I think, wrote to him a couple of times and said, please. And I think tried to suck up by mentioning his, you know, adult books. You know how Roald Dahl was kind of really proud of those adult books, but nobody ever asked him anything about it because they all just wanted to talk about Matilda. So he got this interview and he turned up at Roald Dahl's house, knocked on the door, no answer, knocked for another sort of 20 minutes, giving up hope every minute that passed, and eventually sort of just took a chance and went round the back. And Roald Dahl, I mean, you probably know, used to work in a garden shed at the bottom of his garden. And so my dad was like, oh, just chance it, and went round the back and found him there. And he sort of invited him in, and they actually spent quite a long time chatting and had this great conversation. And he said to him, would you like to print some pages from the book I'm writing at the moment? And he got to take away a chapter from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
That's what he was writing about.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Or had finished writing, just finished. And it was all, you know, he hand wrote everything. So he got to print this, because it's such an amazing thing that he actually was, he had to return it afterwards, sadly. But he actually had in his hands a chapter. Sorry, the dogs are barking in the background.
Don't worry,
big Roald Dahl fans.
Yeah, so. Yeah. They're very excited about the Roald Dahl story. So, so that was the kind of household I grew up in that was sort of obsessed with books and sort of, so nothing was really off limits. And I remember, I mean, I was quite pretentious very early on and very much like, I'm a Charles Dickens type, and sort of would go and hide in the loo. There was a running joke in my family about how I would go and spend like 2 hours in the loo at any one time. And because it was, I have a big family and it was the sort of place I could escape to and just hide away in books. And it was just sort of a bit magical, and you could escape into these other worlds, couldn't you, while my brothers and sisters were fighting over the remote control.
Do you still read in the loo? Now you've got a place of your own. Read wherever you like.
No, but I probably should take that back up. I do love a toilet visit. It's a good place to get things done.
Good multitask.
Right, exactly. I'm a great multitasker. Pooing and reading. Woohoo.
No one's mentioned that on the podcast
yeah,
before.
Yeah, should we talk more about poo? I think it's a great place to do that, you know? It's, as long as it's not too disrespectful to say. Just reading some great works while you're having a poo.
My mum might be very upset with me saying this, but she always has the urge to have a poo whenever she goes into a library. There's obviously something about the power of association.
Some kind
and
of bell
the
ringing.
Paper.
Pavlovian response.
So let's have a look at what is on your bookshelf.
Yes.
Ah, I see Deborah Frances White's book, The Guilty Feminist.
Yeah, I haven't read that yet.
Are you a guilty feminist?
Because I feel guilty about not having read this wonderful feminist. Yeah, I love her. I think she's wonderful. I love the podcast. So I do absolutely need to read it. Basically, this shelf is my come on, hurry up and read these, or at least finish reading them. I've read some of them, but mostly that shelf is my exciting to-be-read pile. My top shelf are books that I will come back to and reread over and over again. They're kind of some very old, some newer, but they're my favourite books. They're just wonderful. There's quite a lot of zombies down the end.
We've got Sarah Silverman, the
yeah,
bedwetter.
I
was going to say that brings us back to the bathroom.
I know,
but it doesn't
I just
really,
want to
does
talk
it?
About just wee and poo as much as possible.
And it's next to Winnie the Pooh.
I know. That was an accident, but it shouldn't have been an accident.
So now we know what your system is.
Exactly, yes. From wee to poo in that order.
Of all of these books up here, what do you think is the one that you come back to the most frequently?
That's a good question. It sort of depends on my mood a bit. Actually, weirdly, to be honest, probably The Day of the Triffids. I know that that's quite a niche by John Wyndham. But I've always loved sci-fi and horror and those kind of apocalyptic ideas, which is very different to what I write about. But it's just, I don't know what it is. There's something in me that just loves a devastation and everybody just being killed.
This copy looks very loved as
yeah,
well.
I think that was my dad's copy I stolen at some. Oh no, actually, what does it say in the, it says J.E. Nicholson in the bit of the front. So that is actually my mum from, must be 40 years ago or something.
And she clearly put her name in it so yeah. no one would take it.
Well, because she's a school teacher, or was a school teacher, I think that that was a kind of obsessive thing that you had to do. You had to put names on everything, especially when you're from a big family as well. Everybody just steals everything, so you have to label everything. All my books when I was little, and all my diaries, start with my name, and then also underneath it was usually get off
Keep
Phil
out.
And Becky, like specifically naming the siblings that would most likely steal it.
So this is a really interesting thing to reread, I think. Is it strangely comforting to know
yeah.
what's going to
happen? We're all going to die, yeah, and that plants are going to take over, yeah. I think that it's high time that they did, really, to be honest. And I just think stuff like that is sort of increasingly relevant. Like, we are all probably going to die soon, you guys. And unless... the world is coming to an end. If it's not at Donald Trump's hand, it is by plants.
I suppose rereading The Day of the Triffids is probably better for your mental health than being on Twitter all day long,
right?
Which also tells you you're going to die all the time.
Yeah, sure.
I see as well we have John Ronson's So You've Been Publicly Shamed. And this is a podcast about shame and shameful literary habits.
I love him so much. I'm such a huge fan of John
Ronson. Is that your favourite of his books?
It is, yeah. And I've got some of the others like on my phone, and I hate reading books on my phone and stuff like that. But it's, yeah, I need to get physical copies of him because I just love him so much. But that is definitely my favourite, and I've reread that quite a few times.
So you're ashamed of reading on your phone?
I am ashamed of it.
Is that just something you do when you're in a tight spot so you've got something
yeah.
to look at wherever you are?
Yeah, and it's stupid because my phone battery dies so immediately. It's so stupid to have phone books on my phone. But it's annoying carrying around big books, isn't it? And I know that that's such a shame because that's probably going to spell the end of our business. But yeah, sometimes I just don't. I want to have a tiny bag, you know.
So we just need to be spending more time on the toilet and
yes.
less time anywhere else.
Exactly. Just never
Let
leave your bathroom. Basically, is what I'm kind of advocating. Oh, yeah, that's the Time Machine. That's a very old copy of the HE.
That's a beautiful edition for the...
That's obviously stolen from
For the
school.
Listeners at home. This is gorgeous. It's a new Windmill series a hardback, and it's got, I guess it was possibly red once, but a kind of orangey linen binding yeah. with a blue and white cover image. It's very... I don't know, when was this published, do you think? 1972?
Yeah, I just, I love the sci-fi stuff. I love sort of mad stories.
Would you ever write it?
I'd love to. I'd love to write a zombie book. I'm obsessed with zombies. I don't know why. But, yeah, I don't know if the appetite is out there for brains. Sorry, that was a terrible zombie joke. I apologise.
I enjoyed it.
But yeah, I would love to. I think it would have to be something under a different name, wouldn't it, probably? People who go to buy a hot mess and get a zombie apocalyptic novel.
You could just put more syllables in Lucy
sure.
Vine to sound a bit zombie-tastic.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Thanks, Daisy. Oh, so that's the top shelf. The books I come back to again and again. Then this second shelf is basically just a vanity project. So I've got my own books there and the languages it's so far been translated into.
So,
yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? The Serbian version. My name is Lucy Vane.
Ah.
And it's Lusivajn. Yeah, I don't really understand that. I just thought your name was your name. But maybe it's about pronunciation. Maybe that's how you would pronounce Lucy Vine. I don't know.
Is it a direct translation or does any of the
yeah.
story shift?
That's such an interesting question. And because I say this a lot, like, I will never know if these are good books. If this has been, you know, written well. Because I don't speak a language. I speak a little bit of French, but certainly not well enough to know if the French translation is a good interpretation. I know when they were translating it, a couple of the publishers from foreign countries kind of came back and said, oh, there was a bit where I think it was the Polish translators sort of said, what is spit roasting? Is it a dance move? And if it's not a dance move, can we make it a dance move? So I think some of them may have toned down some of my worst urges. So I think certainly there were some sort of silly changes, but I not that I'm aware they changed much of it.
I do love this, the French cover of cool, Hot Mess, because Ellie is smoking, which you never see now.
Right, it's so French. And they've changed the name of that. I think the translation is The Rubbish Life of Ellie.
Aww.
So, but I love that. I just think it's kind of hilarious and silly.
I love that even more than Hot Mess.
Yeah, actually. It's cool, isn't it? Yeah, so then the other half of that shelf, my vanity shelf, is like... people I adore, like people I sort of know personally who've written amazing books. So I feel very proud of those people. So then, the next shelf is the TBR pile.
I see you've got Lush by Gabrielle.
Oh yeah, I've nearly finished that, and it is actually really brilliant. I really enjoyed it. She is a lush.
Do you have that essay up? That book is out. I think it's probably out now,
yes,
isn't it?
It is sort of nowish.
Yeah, 2018. Definitely very, very funny memoir about being in your 20s. A sort of probably a good real life companion to Hot Mess.
Yeah,
favourite literary drinkers?
Oh, that is such a great question. Oh, I love, oh my God, what a complete Aisling. They seem like they would be fun to go out drinking with.
I was a big fan of that book. I know, because obviously you write commercial fiction for women.
Yeah.
There are lots of comparisons with Bridget Jones.
Yes.
I think that we've both talked before about being very, very big fans of Helen Fielding as a comic novel. In fact, we were on another podcast, Unpopped, talking about our love of
brilliant podcast.
Bridget Jones. And Bridget is a...
she's on the next shelf. So the shelf
and
under
that...
And a fan
of Chardonnay.
Yes, definitely. So the next shelf is sort of my feminist, wonderful female writers shelf. Dolly Alderton, Everything I Know About Love, she'd be a great drinking companion, wouldn't she? And Holly Bourne, I adore. She's fantastic. Louise O'Neill, I'm not sure there's much drinking there. I don't think she drinks, actually.
It's Surface Breaks, which is the retelling of Little Mermaid. You know, water everywhere.
So good, right?
So let's all have a drink, I believe, is the next line of that poem, according to Homer Simpson. What about, I see, on the subject of, me being a book inspector, you've got quite a serious charge of stalking to make here, Lucy Vine, because you have a shelf nearly entirely dedicated to the work of Marion Keyes.
Yes, it's mostly Marion Keyes and then a little bit also of Sophie Kinsella. These are the two writers who actually... probably influenced me the most. So as I was saying earlier, I was quite a pretentious young reader. I insisted on reading things like Dickens and all that kind of stuff. And I just thought I was sort of too good for things like chick lit, while my sister was reading Marion Keyes, and sometimes I'd hear her laughing her head off in her room. And she eventually kind of said, oh, you have to read... I think actually it was Sophie Kinsella, The Secret Dream World of a Shopaholic was the first one that I read that got me into that kind of world. And honestly, it was just so funny and such a revelation. I couldn't believe I'd sort of been missing out on this amazingness for so long. So then I sort of read everything Sophie Kinsella wrote and then got really into Marion Keyes. And I just think they're so clever and funny and cool. And it's... so depressing how those kind of books are just dismissed as kind of silly fiction for women and all that. I mean, it comes down to that chick lit turn, doesn't it? Which I actually am a fan of. I think chick lit is something we should claim back and just sort of re-embrace.
I would love to see that, because you're right, I think these books are so smart and the pacing of them. I mean, I think Sophie Kinsella is comparable to P.G. Woodhouse, just the silliness of it and the sheer giddy exhilaration, and you know, all the referencing is so smart, and you know, Marion Keyes as well, I'm constantly going on about how much I
love her so much.
Adore her, and the emotional intelligence of it as well. I think that they're
The day that she followed me on Twitter was like such a dream. It's so pathetic, isn't it? Yeah, but I totally screen grabbed and sent to my sister who initially got me into it. I'll DM her.
Nora Ephron there as well.
Of course, yes. She's so wonderful.
Would you say, because she is, I don't think necessarily fairly, famous for her personal writing, and she's often, she's got that label, confessional writer. Now, as well as writing fabulous novels, you write a lot of sort of features and lifestyle pieces, and you've put yourself in your work before. Yeah. Do you enjoy doing that? Do you think women are under more pressure to do that than men?
Oh yeah, I do, definitely. Especially, it is a funny thing, isn't it, how even with women's fiction, we still expect the author to kind of everything is copy sort of thing. And I do kind of enjoy writing about some aspects of my life, but I definitely prefer to hide in fiction. But it, yeah, it is. It's definitely a sort of gendered issue, isn't it? How we're expected to kind of reveal ourselves in a way that men are not.
Have you ever, in any of your writing, used it to get revenge? Are there any people I thought, well, this is what happened from my side of the story? And...
I don't think so. I've definitely tried to get, like, ex's attention. Oh, I'm just going to casually write about our relationship from 5 years ago. Oh, have you texted me about this? Oh, what a shock.
As I sit by the pool, admiring my fabulous breasts in the reflection of the water, I feel sad about the time I spent.
Bottom shelf is kind of a bit of a throwaway shelf of stuff that I kind of enjoy, but don't... like necessarily, yeah, it's probably the shameful shelf to some extent.
I see you have modern dog parenting. What makes a modern dog?
Oh, I'm not ashamed of that. It's just that they're the ones that I don't have an emotional attachment to, maybe. And sometimes like to read like in sort of a hate read way, like Piers Morgan. I kind of just occasionally open that up at a random page just to remind myself what an absolute dickhead he is. So again, I can't bring myself to throw it away because, or give it to a charity shop.
Quite, instead of going on Twitter, yeah. Could, is he still? Yes, he is.
He's still awful. But I think he sort of sneers at people so much on Twitter and stuff like that. It does feel a bit like I sometimes just want to quote back his own book to him. Sometimes I don't because I don't want to get into another fight with Piers Morgan. But it is... that's probably unfair for some of those books, but like I loved Simon Amstell's Help. I thought that was wonderful, and it made me want to go and take ayahuasca, which I've actually written about in my new book.
Oh, I'm really excited about that, because I love reading about people taking ayahuasca and thinking, shall I do that?
I totally want
and
to
then,
do it.
And then I get really bad diarrhea or something, and I have this sort of mini ayahuasca experience over like a bad prawn. I think I'm probably fine. This is all the revolution I need.
Yeah, totally. No, I fully intend, before this book comes out, I fully intend to go and take ayahuasca in, like, the Peruvian jungle.
Oh, let's go.
Do you want to come with me? Let's
do
it. Yes! We'll just live podcast the entire experience, just sitting in the loo with a book, having diarrhea. I love how much we've talked about poo in this. You can have a good edit job here, Dave.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
We'll be back to Lucy shortly, but now it's time for my steal of the week, the book that I love so much that simply buying it is practically an act of theft because it's worth 10 times the cover price. This week I've chosen Everything Under, which is the Booker shortlisted novel by the writer Daisy Johnson. The title I love because I really felt sucked in by this book. The prose is so startling and so immediate that you feel as though Johnson's world and what she's created here is so much more real than reality and your own. There's lots of very clever reference to myths, and it's a very contemporary retelling of something that feels quite classical. It's about relationships and families. It's really, really thought-provoking. It made me think a lot about those relationships, but the beauty of her language is startling. She comes so close to poetry in places. It's a really, really haunting book. It was edited by my friend Anna Fletcher, a brilliant editor at Jonathan Cape. Anna said, I think you're going to love this, and she was absolutely right. You know, that's Everything Under by Daisy Johnson. That was published in summer of 2018 by Jonathan Cape, and it's available everywhere now. Now back to Lucy. I did want to ask you, going back to Mr. Morgan, and as a writer who, you know, I think you're under a certain amount of pressure to be on social media, to promote your work on social media, and also to do that with your journalism too. How do you manage that? Do you have any tips of doing it? Do you love it? Do you hate it?
Well, I'm kind of not great at it, and I do sort of feel quite a lot of guilt about not being more on top of it, but then also feel like too embarrassed to try harder. Yeah, I'm just aware that there is a lot of that kind of pressure, because you need to have a lot of followers and stuff and be talking to people constantly. But I quite like, I am an introvert in quite a lot of ways. I need to sort of disappear and recharge away from other people. I don't want to feel that pressure where I have to tweet, like decide, oh, I need to be tweeting five times a day, or posting an Instagram every couple of days or something like that. I just, I like to kind of disappear into myself for a couple of weeks.
Do you think that the most voracious readers are, I always get voracious and vicarious confused. Which one? I spend a lot of time on my own not talking to people, and I don't know how many words are pronounced.
I had that problem because I was such a reader when I was young. I'd quite often, my family used to take the piss out of me a lot. I just remember this one incident on Christmas Day when I was reading from a book of poems I'd got. And I was like, oh, this is by somebody called Anon. And everybody just mocked me. But there were quite a lot of words when I was younger that I just never said out loud, that I assumed I knew completely because I'd read them so many times.
But I think it is a sign of being... being well read.
I'm so sorry. So you were talking about being a voracious reader.
Do you think that people who like their own company, are they the ones who read the most?
Oh, you'd think so. But then also conversely, like, I liked disappearing into these other people's lives. And I don't know if that was because I didn't like my own. I don't think it was. That's maybe a bit too self-analytical. But there is a kind of, I guess, escapism, isn't there? So if you're kind of looking at other people's lives a lot, then it must, there must be an element of like escaping from your own life. But I don't know, I've always quite liked myself.
I suppose as well.
I'm pretty great.
You can escape, you can share in that world, but you don't have to do anything. It's a lovely, almost like a lazy connection. You can just study them and you've not got to bring anything to that party.
Yeah. And either, you know, feel good about how, like we were talking about Lush, I feel very good because I don't drink that much.
Did you used to?
No, I never have. I've always been quite a lightweight, so I think like even a couple of wines is, whereas Gabrielle seems to be a very impressive drinker, able to drink quite a lot without it affecting her, but I've only ever been able to have like one glass and it goes to my head. Should we have a glass?
I think we should. I like Hunter S. Thompson. I don't really feel like I've had the greatest. I didn't have any cocaine this morning. Here is my health program.
Is it Kat Marnell? Have you read it? Oh, yes. I love that book. It was so brilliant. It's not on the shelf, but I think I read it on
what's it called?
My phone again.
We should remember it for the listeners.
How to Measure Your life. Such a good title. And yeah, I also just really respected the fact that, like, because these kind of books, they do tend to kind of go that path of, oh, I'm so terrible. I'm taking lots of drugs. I'm drinking so much. And then come out the other side of it and I'm all better. So I really respected that she kind of ended that book by being like, I still take a lot of drugs. It's terrible.
And I think that's what we were talking about in terms of women in confessional writing. Yes. Honesty, but there's lots of, oh, it was terrible, but I've repented for my sins, whatever they are.
We're supposed to fix ourselves, aren't we? Yeah. Which is why, you know, Hot Mess, I didn't really want to sort of fix her. I actually kind of wanted to make the point that actually
other people needed to shut up and she was fine the way she is on her own and all of that kind of stuff. It's other people's expectations that need writing, not her.
I think so many people responded to Hot Mess as an anti-love story that it's about, and I think it's there are lots of similarities with Dolly Alderton's wonderful memoir, Everything I Know About Love, because Thank it's you. About, I think, choosing yourself. But do you have any favourite love stories? Are there any books where conventional?
It's funny, yeah, I'm just browsing ending. That top shelf and trying to see any love stories. Well, not really, because, I mean, I guess in Marion Keyes' books, there's generally some kind of a romantic theme. Mm. So I've always enjoyed that. I just don't think it's always been the... I mean, my favourite of Marion Keyes' books and the things I remember most are sort of the sisters. But yeah, it's the sort of friendships and the adventures always to me that I've always sort of remembered from books, not necessarily the sort of epic love stories. And I've read all those kind of things like One Day and stuff like that. But they're not the ones, I mean, that's not on my top shelf. I enjoyed it, but it's not something that sort of haunts me in the same way that something like We Need to Talk About Kevin still does. Like, it's...
There's many things that book was not a love story. Right.
No, well, it's kind of a love story. It's about a mother's love for her son in some ways, and it's kind of devastating. So, I mean, the love stories that I... Sorry. But the love stories that I kind of remember most are those sort of...
toxic, scary, destructive love.
Yes, and also those kind of other kinds of love, those kind of friendship loves. Mm. And that's what I loved about Dolly Alderton's book. That sort of absolute adoration and that sort of love for her friends, which I feel so strongly and I would really like to do more of in my books, that kind of... Which I hopefully have done a bit, but would really like to kind of push even further, because we do, like, there is, like, I'm in love with lots of my friends. I absolutely love them.
I didn't know you felt that way.
I mean, I don't want to motivate you, but I do love you, Daisy. You're so wonderful. But yes, so I just think, to me, the love stories in books have always been a sort of either unusual love or...
Who would be your... I mean, it sounds like you're pretty good for friends, but still improved. But choose a fictional best friend from these shelves...
That is such a good question. I've got some pretty dark books here, so...
Kevin. You can be friends with Kevin.
Yeah, pass.
Do you think you could be friends with Becky Bloomidge from the Shopaholic books?
This is what I was kind of maybe going to say.
With the credit card melting. I mean,
it's a funny thing, isn't it, between... being obsessed with a book and actually really liking and wanting to be friends with the main character. Like, I do love Becky Bloomidge. She's one of the people I've spent most time with because there were so many books, but also, I mean, she's desperately likable. I'm not sure I'm into shopping enough. I do like shopping, but I am a person that prefers to go shopping alone and just very grab whatever I need and go. So I'm not sure that we would get on very well.
Those books, a lot is that, you know, for any listeners who are unfamiliar, Becky Bloomidge, who is a really does have psychological shopping problems that are never resolved. But she's got a best friend, Suze. It's not an easy relationship. And I think that she unusually... makes that relationship, Sophie Kinsella, the writer, very three-dimensional. Yeah. And Suze does quite often call Becky out for her bad behaviour. And also Becky often feels neglected by Suze. And they've got, I think, they have lives that come together and then come apart. And it's, I think, weirdly, one of the most realistic portrayals of friendship I've ever read.
Yeah, oh, definitely. So I would love to be in their gang, but I would probably not want to spend that much time with them.
This looks amazing.
Oh, they are books from my childhood that were just...
Sylvia Ward.
The Menems.
I don't know the book either.
So brilliant, brilliant books. Children's books, but they hold their own. I haven't actually reread them for... It's about sort of woolen... I don't even know how to describe them. Somebody knits a family called the Menems, and then they come to life and start living. And it's just so lovely, lovely. And I have such... I mean, I don't reread them very often, but when I look at them on my shelf, I just am sort of filled with this love and this... the feelings I felt when I read it back then, and they're just such brilliant, brilliant books. Yeah, and The Silver Crown by Robert O'Brien is another one that just is so brilliant. And it's so random. It basically, there's just a magical silver crown that, and she goes on the most epic adventures, and they're just books that I read so much when I was little, or teenager probably, actually.
And I see you've got Watership Down. Oh, there's another Mellon's book as well. Did it make you cry?
Oh, yes. God, I can barely look at it without crying.
What are the other... When's the last time you cried at a book?
Because I've been reading a lot of quite funny fiction in recent... Especially because of the books that I've written, I get sent a lot of very funny and drunken books. So I don't... I haven't been sent any... Do you know what? I don't know if you've read it yet. The 30 Short Stories in Raw by Cecilia Ahern.
Oh!
Have you seen it?
I have that. Oh, I'm going to read it.
There's some of the... I mean, they're obviously too short maybe to kind of fully get into your soul, but some of them just hit really hard. Like, it's just quite difficult to read some of it. It's just astonishing. I'm trying to think of the last thing that made me cry.
How... What kind of reader are you? Do you read every day?
No, I go through phases of it. I'll be reading sort of voraciously for sort of a few weeks at a time, and then I won't read for weeks. I find it very difficult when I'm writing a book, because I know that if I actually read the wrong or too good a book when I'm writing my own book, then I'll just start stealing it and I won't even know I'm doing it. It's like for years after Bridget Jones, I couldn't...
Prose turned up in the book.
It's really, it's more almost the sort of style, the voice. If I've become really kind of immersed in a book, I do find myself sort of speaking like the characters and stuff. So I do have to be a bit careful when I'm actually writing for myself, because I don't want to steal. It is tricky, yeah.
But do you think that you, would you be a writer if you weren't a reader? Or do you think that what you read has shaped you as a writer?
That's a really good question. I definitely think, I read so much when I was young, but I never actually considered that I could be a writer, because that seemed like saying, you know, I'll be a pop star to me.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, so it just sort of seemed like a silly... So when I went, I still didn't know when I went off to do English at university, and everyone was like, oh, you're going to be a teacher, because my parents are teachers, and also what really else do you do with an English degree? As I was finishing university, I was quite like, oh God, what do I want to do? And then got work experience in magazines and then a job. Yeah, I was kind of looking at maybe subbing, because I didn't think there was really any way of actually being a real writer. And then, you know, things started happening.
So is that what you were doing? Was it more production than...
No, I was always... I was the editorial assistant, and then a junior writer, and then a staff writer, and then a senior writer, and then a, you know, entertainment editor or something like that. But still just didn't really have any faith. I think I still kind of think, oh, if I can just sort of trick people into publishing this next one, then it, you know, I'll at least have this many out. Hopefully, the dream is that they'll just keep letting me write books, like sort of one a year deal. That would be nice.
Wow.
And zombie books in between, maybe.
I think they should. Ryan, if you're listening, I'm sure very upset if there aren't any more Lucy books. I want these to continue.
Thank you,
Lily. So yeah, back to poo. I'm going to get into so much trouble. Did you enjoy the Da Vinci Code?
I did. Sorry.
Flat. Millions
it's did. It's hidden at the bottom because it is, you know, a guilty pleasure. I hate that term, to be honest, but it is. It was, it's a rip-roaring... I hate that term too. I don't know why. It's bringing out awful terms in me.
I want rip-roaring to come back. I enjoy rip-roaring.
Okay. It's a rip-roaring read. Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting, isn't it? It was an interesting idea. But I just for some reason didn't want to throw it away. Well, I didn't throw anything away. I got rid of a lot of books when I moved house a few months ago. Anything I didn't feel like sort of an emotional connection to. But for some reason, are you going to read me a terrible passage? Go on then, shame me. He sold a lot of books.
Kneeling in the first pew, Silas pretended to pray as he scanned the layout of the sanctuary. Saint-Sulpice, like most churches, had been built in the shape of a giant Roman cross. Not tonight, Silas thought. Saint-Sulpice hides her secrets elsewhere.
Okay.
And I love that, because that's definitely Silas. Something the human would think.
Yeah, of course they would.
Oh,
Look who's come to read the Da Vinci Code.
Oh, it's Ivy. Don't do it, Ivy.
You'll have to read them all.
No, I don't think I read any others. There was only that one.
Are there any books that we have not mentioned? I like this the combination of How to Build a Girl, then. Not that kind of girl.
I know. There was quite a lot of girl stuff going on for a while, wasn't there?
Huge thanks to Lucy for sharing her books and her lovely puppies with us. And thank you all so much for tuning in and listening. You can find me on social media. I'm at NotRollerGirl on Twitter, at TheDaisyBee on Instagram. And I'll be putting up some pictures of Lucy's books and dogs. Also, keep an eye out for Lucy's brand new novel coming in 2019, Are We Nearly There Yet? I think it's going to be really funny and fun and pacey. If you have any questions at all about the show, you can email us. It's ybooked@gmail.com. That's the letter Y and booked@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening and for all your support on social media. We really, really love hearing from you about your thoughts on the podcast. And please do rate, review and subscribe. It helps other people to find us. Your book was produced by Dale Shaw for New Alaska and hosted by Acast. I'll see you next time for more book inspection.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.